are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. And in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. It's the end of the work week. Happy Friday, everybody. And we can finally put all this stuff behind us with Auburn basketball, 4 years in the making. I remember the day that they were announced that Auburn was in the NCAA investigation because of the FBI's look into college basketball and the corruption surrounding it. I was doing a show here on ESPN 106.7 with Zach Blackerby. It was the lunch break. And I remember the day that all that stuff was announced. And now look, 4 years later, finally a conclusion. It's been quite some time coming, but we're on the good side of it now. Lance, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing good, Noah. And, you know, like you just said, I'm really relieved for this to all finally be over, for the NCAA to have finally come out with a decision. It was so random. Like, we had no heads up about this. It was just an early statement this morning.
Just like 4 years ago, you wake up in the middle of a summer, I think. 4 years ago, you wake up, and all of a sudden there's news that Auburn's caught up in some basketball scandal, right? And right. Just like that today, you wake up and you are waiting for impending doom, and it doesn't come.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess that's just kind of the way the NCAA operates. It's kind of like, you know, the memes about Explorer, like the Microsoft's browser and how slow it is. And it's like all these different browsers will be like, okay, well, we've done this. Okay, well, we've done this. And it'll be like Internet Explorer will be on like the first thing that they had all accomplished. It'll be, and so now everybody's like, all right, we've moved past it. And NCAA 4 years later is like, I've got a solution. It's like, I've finally come to a conclusion. So, yeah. Yeah, good job, NCAA, moving so quickly, as we know you do.
Number to call, 334-321-1390 is the number that will put you through to us here on the Line. We'll be talking about Auburn men's basketball program moving forward now that the NCAA has announced its penalties for the men's basketball program, which here is kind of a brief synopsis of it. It's a slap on the wrist. I'm not going to run through all of them just yet, but here are some of the highlights. It's a four-year probation period, which basically just means the NCAA has their eye on you, and you have to fill out a ton of paperwork. That's from what I can gather. So if anything, it's just a painstaking process for the coaching staff and the program itself to continue to have to file with the NCAA on a year-in and year-out basis. They have two scholarships reduced over that four-year probation period. That is not two each season, which is how I initially read it. Yeah. Which still wasn't that big of a deal to me, but I see how it could be, especially if you don't recruit as well as Auburn does on a year-in and year-out basis. But instead, it is just two over a four-year period, just two total scholarships reduced. So that's definitely manageable for Auburn, because what is that, like a quarter of a scholarship every year? I mean, that's nothing, right? Auburn should be able to manage that just fine from a roster standpoint. Bruce Pearl is suspended for two games. So he'll be out for Nebraska and North Alabama. He announced that earlier today. And then I think Chuck Person got a 10-year show cause penalty, but I would be shocked if he gets back into coaching in that 10-year window anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he is. And you know, I'm curious to see who coaches tomorrow's game. You and me? You want to go? We'll coach.
Tomorrow it's Ira Bowman.
Okay.
And then North Alabama, I think I read that it's Stephen Pearl.
All right. Well.
Which I also thought was interesting that you wouldn't have the same guy for both games, but they're giving both of those guys opportunities to be a head coach for a night.
Right.
Which I appreciate, because those guys It's much deserved.
Well, I think the way Auburn operates, and I don't know if this is the case for other schools, is they assign certain assistant coaches to scout certain teams. And so their responsibility whenever that game rolls around at that time of the year is to be the one that provides the information on the opposing team. And so they're the one that kind of has the knowledge. So I assume the reason that Bowman is doing it, I may be completely wrong on this. This is just my assumption that he may be doing it because he's the one that scouted Nebraska. And then Stephen Pearl is the one that actually scouted North Alabama. And so they're going to kind of take the reins to be able to communicate as the ringleader for the team during the game. I may be completely off on that. That's just my assumption. Or it could be what you said, which is they're just giving both of them an opportunity to coach.
Once again, a two-game suspension for Bruce Pearl. He'll be taking that against Nebraska tomorrow and then North Alabama on Tuesday. Another little nugget here, a vacation of all team records in which student-athletes competed while ineligible, those two athletes being Danjel Purifoy and Austin Wiley. And I think that's going to amount for a handful of games prior to Auburn making the NCAA tournament in 2018 and 2019. So yeah, those I don't think are going to be touched, but some midseason wins back in like 2016 or 2017 will be vacated as it stands.
Yeah, I believe Auburn went 18-14 in 2016. Yeah, okay, cool. As long as you don't take away my NCAA tournament wins, I'm okay.
Well, friend of the program, Nathan King, at Nathan King 24/7, tweeted out earlier that based off of his research, he says, I think TJ Dunnan's buzzer beater against Mercer is going to be vacated.
Oh, dude. Okay,
it still happened.
Sad.
It still happened. Also, Justin Ferguson responded with a tweet, and he'll be on with us later on in the show today. Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer tweeted out in response video of the buzzer beater as kind of like, they can't take this from us.
No,
it happened.
Can't.
We saw it.
That was Wiley's first game.
It was.
Yeah.
It was, and he went off in that game, to be fair.
Sunday afternoon.
It was. I was in attendance. Were you in attendance?
I was not, but I was watching it. It was a game that I actually, I believe I had tickets to. Like, my dad and I had tickets to, and we just ended up not going because
Sunday That was
afternoon.
One of those holiday bleacher games, and I was a student at the time, but my dad came with me to the game, and my dad is notorious for wanting to leave games early when it starts to spin in a negative direction, not because he doesn't support the team. He makes that very known. He's leaving because he believes himself to be a jinx. And as soon as he leaves the building, apparently good things will happen. But on multiple occasions, when I've gone to games with him and things have gone dark, it's like one of those memes where last words uttered before disaster, but yep, flip it, it's last words uttered before greatness, because I was the reason why he was still in the house for the prayer and journey here.
Well, there you go. There you go. I'll say this about Auburn basketball. For the first, I don't know, five or six games I went to, they were all losses. Like, straight up, all losses. And the most recent one was that game against Ole Miss just a couple years ago when Auburn scored 55 points. It was just an abysmal game for Auburn. That was the last loss that I've attended since then. Where I think we're either even or we're in the winning column in games that I have attended now, so.
Need to improve that record, Lance.
We do. I need to see more wins at Auburn Arena.
Number to call, 334-321-1390, as we continue to discuss the NCAA announcing its penalties for Auburn men's basketball program. Of course, it's a slap on the wrist. I think this is one of the harshest penalties that I've seen to this point compared to other schools that were caught up in this same investigation. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's one of the harshest ones.
Yes, I would agree. And the fact that,
especially considering it's taking into account self-imposed penalties.
Right, and that's something actually Justin Ferguson talked about earlier, tweeted about, and we'll get his thoughts more in depth on this. But the NCAA cited the sanctions that Auburn had self-imposed on themselves, the postseason ban in 2020, the reduction of one scholarship in 2020, and the ban on unofficial visits in the 2017-18 season. So the NCAA kind of looked at it and said, well, we could penalize you further. They actually said that in their statement. It's like, we could, like, it is perfectly fine underneath our laws that we penalize you and give you a postseason ban this year, but because you already self-imposed and you did these things, we're going to allow you to just be on probation. We're going to slap you on the wrist and take your money. So,
Right, and take your money. You're right, a $5,000 fine plus 3% of the men's basketball program budget. That was one of the penalties that I had not mentioned yet, as I don't think that's going to make that big of a difference when it's all said and done. But I think the story today, when you talk about the NCAA announcing its penalties for the Auburn men's basketball program, here's my takeaway. The future is safe. The future is bright. This is behind us. And in about two games, you're not even going to be feeling the effects of this anymore.
Yep. And to be honest with you, like you said, Auburn having to manage not having two scholarships over the course of the next four seasons is not going to be, I think, that much of an issue for Bruce Pearl to handle. So I think, honestly, this is while we both agree this is a pretty heavy-handed penalty given the circumstances and given the fact that Auburn kind of self-imposed some things on themselves already, I will say Auburn can handle this well. And like you said, the fans will not even really be paying attention to it, thinking about it. Three or four games from now, it'll be way behind us. Thank goodness that Auburn has their compliance department, because if they did not self-impose these bans, we might not have gotten to see Jabari Smith play in March, potentially, if Auburn makes it.
So there you have it. The NCAA announces its penalties for the Auburn men's basketball program. If you want to call in about it, 334-321-1390. We're going to be talking about it throughout the show today. I'm going to pivot to some college football news that I just saw appear on my timeline. I'm about 30 minutes behind the masses on this one. But Brent Venables named his coordinators, and he retained a few assistants with his new staff at Oklahoma. His defensive coordinator, of course, we already know who his OC is. That's Jeff Lebby from Ole Miss. He brought in Ted Roof to be the defensive coordinator.
Really? Interesting.
What?
Interesting decision.
I half expected him to take a similar approach to how Brian Hartson, I think, is going to approach the offensive coordinator position, get a youngster, mold them, for lack of a better term, a yes man, because they are so inexperienced that they're going to follow the tutelage and the mentorship of Brent Venables. And Brent Venables would have a heavy hand in the defense, but hiring Ted Roof doesn't necessarily signal that to me, because he is neither young, he is neither inexperienced, and I highly doubt he will be in a position to where he is going to be, not that he would be rebellious or anything like that, but just say that he's not a yes man, I don't think. He's got too much experience to be that.
Yeah, you look at his track record. I mean, he was DC at Auburn from 2009 to 2011. He's been at places like Minnesota, Georgia Tech, Penn State, App State, NC State, Vanderbilt, obviously at Clemson for just a little bit. He's been all over the place. He started actually as a grad assistant in Alabama, so he's literally been all over the place. Ted Roof, very experienced, like you just said. Not a yes man, does not seem like it. Will be interesting to see the dynamic between what Venables has run typically in the past and what Ted Roof is going to want to run, if there are any discrepancies. Maybe they both run very similar schemes. I'd have to take a look into what they both like to operate with.
Well, he was an assistant with Venables in 2021 at Clemson.
Right, so you'd like to think that they have some similarities in terms of philosophy. So this may be a good fit.
They have a good relationship. You're right. I just expected Brent Venables to have more of a direct role in the defense, and he may, but hiring somebody with Ted Roof's experience tells me that he might be taking more of a CEO role with Oklahoma. Because you let somebody like Ted Roof, not saying that he's an elite defensive coordinator by any means, because you look at his career and he is not, but you hire somebody with Ted Roof's experience, you're expecting to lean on them for that category. I don't know. This just seems like an odd hire to me. Other people may disagree. I understand from a fit standpoint, considering he was with Venables last year at Clemson. It just seems interesting to me. The last time that Ted Roof was a defensive coordinator instead of an assistant was at Vanderbilt in 2020 on Derek Mason's staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like you just said, while it may be good from a fit perspective, I'm curious to see what the dynamic is between Venables and Ted Roof, considering all Venables has done up until this point is coach things on the defensive side of the ball. Like you just said, CEO type of role for Venables, potentially. That's an interesting approach. This is a really big time job. This is a really big thing for Venables to be taking on at Oklahoma, and for him to opt to do it this way, I think it's interesting to kind of be, you know what, I'm going to be hands off on both sides of the ball, and I'm just going to kind of be the head man instead of having my hand specifically on one side of the ball, as we've seen other coaches like Gus Malzahn and even Brian Harsin. Like, if we're trying to relate this to an Auburn thing, it's like they have, it's clear, their hand in the offense. Will be interesting to see how much Venables has his hand in the defense, or if he's just going to lay back and let Roof do his thing.
And I imagine he still will play a role and have his hand in it, because that's what he knows. And honestly, this may be the best opportunity Ted Roof has had to be able to get back to a head coaching position. He's 57 years old. The last time he was a head coach was in the mid-2000s at Duke. He's got a 6-45 career record as a head coach. He may not want to be a head coach again, but he is about as close to the top as it gets without being a head coach, considering he's at a place as illustrious as Oklahoma. But when they hired Jeff Lebby, when the sources were saying that Jeff Lebby was headed to Oklahoma, you and I talked about this a couple of days ago, and it was easy to see two of the best coordinators in the game now meet at the same location. The reason why this is an interesting move to me is, while Brent Venables is learning how to be a CEO, while he is learning how to be a head coach, I expected him to stick to what was most familiar to him,
yeah,
which is being a defensive coordinator. That's why the move to bring in Lebby made so much sense, because he got somebody in that was so capable of making that offense work.
Yeah. So, again, I'm interested to see what the dynamic is between Venables and Ted Roof. And I will say, I mean, overall, think about that staff. Venables is your CEO, Ted Roof really experienced, and then Jeff Lebby as your OC with the ability to recruit and to bring in guys that you want. I mean, it sounds like they're going to be able to kind of sustain some success that Oklahoma's had in the past. I'm interested to see what Oklahoma looks like.
Do you think the defense is going to get better?
I would hope so. I hope so.
I believed it at one point, and then I saw that they hired Ted Roof.
You think this is a bad hire?
He hasn't had the best defenses in the world.
But Venables is on staff.
That's right, but I'm wondering if Ted Roof, how much of a role he's going to play in it.
I think that Venables, being the defensive guru that he is aware of what Ted Roof has accomplished in the past, and maybe he brought on somebody that was older just to kind of have on staff to kind of be that guy that gives him some suggestions. But overall, it maybe is, at the end of the day, Venables defense that he's running. I don't think that Roof is going to hinder this Oklahoma defense. I think the fact that you have two defensive minds on your staff, if anything in the Big 12, should benefit you, especially with the fact that, like I just said, they're still going to be able to recruit some guys. But I'm with you in the fact that this is not like the splashiest hire that they could have made, but at the same time, I'm trying to think, who would they have gotten that would have been a better fit?
A young guy and just had Brent Venables do it.
Who would you have gotten, though?
I don't know, because I don't keep up with all of the youth in the college game at coordinator positions, but I could have seen them go after someone who's got a lot of energy that could really help them out on the recruiting trail. That would be an attractive option for recruits when they're looking for somebody to go and play for, and that guy could then go and learn under Brent Venables while Brent Venables is still leading the charge on the defensive side of the football. So I'll be interested to see how this plays out with Ted Roof and how much of a role he's going to play, because, look, I'll be real, I don't think Ted Roof has been that great of a defensive coordinator across his career. When you look at how many different stops he's been at, why has he not been able to keep himself at one place for longer than a year? You know, I mean, he's been bouncing from place to place since 2017.
Right, and I'll say two things just to kind of play devil's advocate here. Maybe Venables is doing something similar to what Harsin is done in year one, which is just bring in guys that make him comfortable with the landscape. You brought in two incredibly experienced coordinators, guys that have been in the game for a little bit, that understand the landscape and understand how to approach things, just to kind of ease himself in to life as an Oklahoma Sooner, as the CEO, right?
Someone to lean on with experience,
yes,
even head coaching experience. Ted Roof does have that, albeit at 6-45 overall record, but he does have some of that.
Even if it's not the best, right? And I would argue that Mike Bobo was not the best, but he was experienced and he helped transition Brian Harsin into the SEC, especially when it comes to different styles and things on the offensive side of the ball. I think Harsin's philosophy is going to work long term, but having somebody that understands the landscape to be right there beside you, to kind of be coaching with you and to be calling those plays with you, I think was very beneficial for Auburn in year one. So now in year two, Auburn's able to kind of lean off of the experience that Harsin got from Bobo and just kind of you know, move along from that point. I think this could be similar to that. I think that could be a possibility here.
Let's head to a quick break here on the Line. When we come back, we'll take a look at our scouting report on the Nebraska Cornhuskers. I have a feeling Auburn will not be gracious host of them coming into the Southeast with Bruce Pearl out for tomorrow's basketball game. Auburn by 50, question mark. We'll talk about that when we come back. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. That'll put you through to us here on the Line on this joyous day. Auburn men's basketball evading massive penalties from the NCAA. They did still get handed down some penalties, but a lot of the ones that were self-imposed were accepted by the NCAA, and it seems to be just a slap on the wrist moving forward. The future is bright for Auburn men's basketball, and I know a lot of folks out there are excited that the hammer didn't come down on the Tigers, despite it being, to me, one of the harshest penalties I think that they've given to one of the teams involved in this investigation, especially considering the coach that did it. The players were already on campus. It didn't give Auburn, in my mind, any competitive advantage on the basketball floor. So I don't know how Auburn was found in wrongdoing here other than just not knowing about it.
Yeah, and again, like you just said, I don't feel like the two players that Auburn had gave Auburn necessarily a competitive advantage over anybody. If we're specifically talking about vacating the wins that were like 2016-ish, 2017, Austin Wiley was in the early stages of his development, and he was not a legitimate factor, I don't feel like, on that team for the majority of the year. And then Dangelo Purifoy, I will say, Purifoy was probably at his best in his freshman year, but he's still, neither of those two players, I don't think, were making that much of a legitimate impact to quantify the penalties that the NCAA has put on Auburn. Also, question, has anything happened to Will Wade or LSU? Just literally nothing? Are we just officially letting that go?
That could be because there's more drama to sort through.
Where there's just a lot there, and the NCAA is just like, all right, so Auburn took us 4 years, and it was pretty clear what's going on. This is going to take about 12. So
yeah, Will Wade may not even be there.
Will Wade won't even be there, and it'll be the Internet Explorer all over again. Like, Will Wade, you come back here. Oh, he's gone. Oh, well, stupid NCAA. All right, let's move on.
Part of the penalties given to Auburn is Bruce Pearl is out for the next two games. He has been suspended for two games. He could have chose when to take them. He's choosing Nebraska and North Alabama the next two, which, in my honest opinion, I think those are the two to do it against. Those are Auburn's two worst opponents in my mind over the next four games. Yes, I am saying that St. Louis and Murray State are just as good, if not better, than Nebraska.
Yes, I would completely agree with that. Yeah, I don't think that Nebraska is playing very good basketball right now. And I would not be surprised if Auburn came out and punched them in the mouth tomorrow.
Scouting report on the Nebraska Cornhuskers here before we go to break. Got about 4 minutes till we head to the middle of the hour break. Nebraska advertised about 6'6". Auburn's taller than that. I think they'll be able to handle what Nebraska's going to throw against Auburn in the post. Nebraska's largest player is coming in at 6'10", a freshman forward. Wilhelm Bradenbach, the freshman out of California, just averaging 3.7 points per game and 2.8 rebounds. The most productive big man for the Cornhuskers is the 6'8", 232-pound Ford junior out of Kansas City, Missouri, Derek Walker. He's averaging 9-6. Auburn's front court should eat in this ballgame.
I think they definitely will. And when you look at Nebraska and their offensive rebound percentage, 335th in the nation, they will not be getting second chance shots on this team. And I think Auburn is going to be able to do what they will on both ends of the floor inside the paint. I don't think this is going to be particularly pretty for Nebraska. And what's worse is that, well, if they are trying to crash the glass, right? If they're trying to get these high percentage shots and they're not getting like layups and things like that, why don't they try and step out and shoot some threes and maybe see if they can just rain it on Auburn and just outshoot them and outperform them? Well, they're shooting about 25% from three.
Oh!
Which is 350th nationally out of 358 teams.
How is that not last?
It's eighth worst nationally.
Which
you would think a fourth of your shots going down from three would be probably worst in the nation, but it's there. It's up there. It's close. And then you look at their two-point percentage. I mean, it's 54.5%. I mean, that's in the top 60 nationally, but still, they're not getting the rebounds when they miss, and they're not making their outside shots. This is offensively not a good team. I'll tell you also, it's not a very good defensive team either. They're giving up, what is it, 75 points a game? Yeah. Scoring about 76. Just not looking pretty for Nebraska, man.
I will still make fun of them. Auburn basketball was here at one point.
That's true.
But now we made it.
We made it, guys. Forget about that. I'm going to pull up.
You can make a PSA for Nebraska basketball and say, only 1 in 4 Cornhuskers can hit a three. They need your help. Send money.
75 points allowed.
Don't do that, NCAA.
75 points allowed per game is 303rd nationally. They're really not good. And you look at their KenPom rankings, right? You look at the chart, and you'll see like green things for green numbers for like, oh, it's actually a good statistic, and you'll see red for bad. They have three red ones, one green one, and everything else is white.
What does that mean?
It means they're average.
Not applicable.
They're average in most categories, and they're bad in effective field goal percentage, offensive rebounding, and 3-point percentage. And they're good at not turning the ball over. Only turned the ball over about 14.7% of the time. Auburn's defense, on the other hand, turning opponents over 22.2% of the time. That's in the top 60 nationally. So Auburn knows how to turn teams over. I believe they're turning teams over about 17, 18 times a game, which is pretty solid. Especially considering
Nebraska's turning folks over about 16 times a game.
Yep.
So there's one thing that Nebraska does well. They don't turn the ball over, and they turn their opponents over.
Well, you could also say the same thing for Auburn. Auburn's 17th nationally in turnover percentage, and then they are 55th nationally in turnover percentage forced. So Auburn doesn't turn the ball over as well, and they force opponents to turn the ball over. I'm going to be honest, I think Auburn's a more talented team in this matchup. If we're talking about turnover battle here, I think that Auburn's probably going to win it, and I just don't think that Nebraska's going to have a lot of success on the offensive end in this matchup.
This game tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. on ESPN2. Be looking for that tomorrow morning. Holiday Hoopsgiving. We'll be back.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
30 minutes into hour number one of the Friday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you here on the show today. Number to call, 334-321-1390. And we got Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer with us here for this segment. Justin, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
We're doing really well. Of course, the topic of conversation today is the NCAA announcing its penalties for the Auburn men's basketball program, and it comes off as a slap on the wrist for the Tigers. Good news for Auburn fans and the Auburn basketball program alike.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is basically a slap on the wrist, like you said. You got a situation where, you know, the NCAA accepted that you took your postseason ban, some of the recruiting sanctions you put on yourself a few years back. Those things held up, and outside of Bruce not going to be able to coach the next couple of games, and you might not be able to give a walk on a scholarship, you know, a couple of them here in this next little stretch, but you know, that's pretty much it. That is pretty much all that is going to happen for Auburn. So it was a long time, frustrating process, I know, for a lot of people, but it's all behind Auburn now, and it's a really, really good day for the program that they can come out of this without any more major punishment.
The NCAA said in their statement, although a second year of postseason ban is an appropriate penalty, that it falls within the available ranges for level one aggravated cases. The panel declines to do so largely in response to the timing and circumstances around Auburn's decision to self-impose a ban, basically saying that, look, we could hit these guys with another penalty and say that you can't go to the postseason this year, but because you already did that, we're gonna let it go. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that the NCAA is being fair there and not letting Auburn go to the postseason this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I mean, you got to kind of, when you talk about a postseason ban, you especially this far out. I mean, Jabari Smith was a kid when this happened. Zeb Jasper was the only player on Auburn's roster who was in college anywhere when these incidents took place. And so, if you punish people now for something that happened in the past when no one involved other than Bruce Pearl is really in you know, still with the program, you know, that doesn't seem right. And the timing of it's the case as well. If you come out with this earlier in the year, okay, maybe you have time to transfer, you have time to go somewhere else, you have time to know that, okay, I'm not going to play the postseason, so I need to go home. But this is December, so, you know, putting a ban on him right now would have just been crazy, just because it would just punish guys who had nothing to do with this, and that's not anything I don't think the NCAA wants to step in right now.
Moving forward, of course, one of the penalties is that Bruce Pearl is suspended for two games. He is choosing to take on that penalty over the next two games, which includes tomorrow and then next week against North Alabama. How is Auburn handling this situation? I think from what I've seen, they're going to have two different head coaches for these two games. I believe it's Ira Bowman tomorrow and then Stephen Pearl on Tuesday. Kind of shine some light on that situation.
Yeah, it's a situation where, you know, you have a spot where your guys have already kind of been scouting these teams, already kind of game planning for it. And it's one of those things where I'm sure, you know, Ira Bowman had the lead scout for Nebraska. So it makes sense for him to be kind of the guy to be the game planner and the acting head coach in the game against Nebraska. And I'm sure Steven was the one to do it on Tuesday for North Alabama. Auburn rotates those responsibilities. So it makes sense that they would rotate their responsibilities now. But here's the thing. It's also going to be kind of team coached anyway, right? You know, everybody's going to be involved with that. Everybody's going to kind of pick up the slack from what you're missing out with Bruce. But, I mean, you've got two really good replacements here. Ira Bowman's been a head coach in the past. Stephen Pearl is Bruce Pearl's son. So, I mean, like, it's really, you know, Auburn can – it shows kind of the depth and the strength of Auburn's staff that is when, you know, Bruce has to serve this suspension, they can go with a guy who knows him better than anybody else and a guy who's been through the fire before as a head coach.
What's the scouting report on the 5-5 Nebraska Cornhuskers coming down here to the Southeast?
It's going to be interesting to see who shows up for Nebraska tomorrow. They've had flu issues kind of like Auburn has, but Auburn felt like, you know, Bruce Pearl said yesterday, felt like those guys would be kind of over it and kind of close to full strength for Saturday. Nebraska's had some absences. They've had guys miss practice. It was kind of iffy and kind of touch and go where it would be like, all right, well, will they, you know, be able to come over? It sounds like they are, though, and everything's on track. So Nebraska team has played a really tough schedule, especially recently. Lost in four overtimes at NC State, lost a tough defensive battle to Indiana, and got the doors blown off them by Michigan. But it wasn't like it was a route from beginning to end in that game either. This is a Nebraska team that's got one of the best point guards in the country, probably one of the best point guards Auburn's going to face all season. You know, leading the way for them, they've got a couple of guys who have some NBA potential to them, and the McGowan's brothers, former really highly rated recruits coming out of high school. Not a team that shoots the ball well from deep so far this year. Not a team that defends the three ball well. Doesn't rebound particularly well either. A little undersized in the front court. So if Auburn plays their game, takes care of the ball, and relies on that front court, I think they'll be fine and be able to kind of, you know, get a good win here. But yeah, Alonzo Verge, the point guard from Nebraska, I mean, he's an excellent player, 6'3", senior, does really, really well manning it. So I feel like this is kind of like a different version of like the UCF game in the case of these are teams, and also, you know, Nebraska likes to turn people over, 20th in the country in that, kind of like UCF, but, you know, bigger in the backcourt than they are in the front court. So Auburn's guards are going to have to hold their own in this one, and then Auburn's got to be able to take advantage of the fact that the front court of this Nebraska team, not particularly good at rebounding the ball, not particularly good you know, at scoring super efficiently, and it's not a team that if Auburn gets into a shooting contest with them, the numbers say Auburn should be able to take care of that. So you know, it's a solid matchup. It's a favorable matchup for an Auburn team projected to win probably by about 12-13 right now. Interesting to see who shows up for Nebraska tomorrow and how much that affects everything. So either way, I think this is if Auburn plays its game, we could get another solid win this time away from home against a team in the Big Ten that, you know, no matter where Nebraska ends up this season, it's going to be a quality win just because of who they are and where they're from.
You mentioned taking advantage in this game with the front court. Is that the most favorable matchup for Auburn, is letting Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith do what they want to inside?
Yeah, I definitely think so. This is a situation where if you are If you're Auburn, you know their guys. I think they start 2 6-9 guys in the front court, and they've had some illnesses there up front. And you know, Jabari's playing really well right now. Walker's playing really well right now. And Jalen Williams, Dylan Cardwell. This has got to be a game for those guys to say, hey, you might have to take on a little bit more of the scoring responsibilities. You might be able to kind of take it down low and take advantage of the fact that the team that doesn't do well on the boards is the team that doesn't have your size. And you know, if they do that, that should open up some opportunities for those guards to make plays and maybe score a little bit more. So, yeah, to me, that is the matchup Auburn is going to want to exploit the most.
A little bit broader of a question here, talking about the entire conference and where Auburn falls in it. We did some power rankings earlier this week, and Lance and I both had Auburn somewhere in that 2-4, 2-5 range. I'm curious where you evaluate this team stacking up against an Alabama team that just beat Gonzaga, a Kentucky team that hasn't really played anybody, and then LSU, Arkansas, and Tennessee, who have kind of had some up and down play here and there, but all in all, impressive starts to the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think Auburn's a team that is going to be right up there with any of them. I think if you want to tier teams, I mean, look at none of the teams in the SEC, I think, are in the top eight right now, but in the AP poll, but there's a lot of them just kind of towards the top, you know, in the top 25. I think it's pretty balanced, right? We're waiting to see what Kentucky can do against more, like, legitimate competition, and they're about to get that. Their next stretch of games here is a pretty tough one. LSU's number two in net. They're really impressive. They're really talented. I really like where LSU's at right now. That's a team that's good. Tennessee, you know, it's a team that can be kind of up and down. Arkansas as well. I think Auburn is firmly a top team in the SEC. I think they have the potential, you know, if things click, they have the talent. Alabama as well. Those teams have the talent to, you know, win the SEC. So right now it's kind of hard for me to separate a lot of these SEC teams because the teams that have better records may have not necessarily played the same grind as some that had. And we're just waiting to see, I think. Kentucky's a perfect example. I hadn't really played anybody tough since the Duke game on opening night, but they have the best collection of talent in the league right now. So, you know, it'll be very interesting to see. I think Auburn, you know, if you wanted to say you thought Auburn was playing the best basketball of anybody in the SEC right now, I would say, you know what, you can make that argument, and there's a lot of good things you can point to that. But if you say, you know what, Auburn's probably fourth, fifth, sixth somewhere in the league, you can make that argument as well. I think it's just kind of wide open, and that's what's going to make the SEC play so much fun.
Switching to football real quick before we let you get out of here. Jarquez Hunter named to the all-freshman team by the conference, and this was a conversation that we were having yesterday, which Jarquez Hunter, great running back, second on the depth chart. I'm curious to see how you think he fits in this scheme moving forward with Auburn chasing after multiple running backs in this recruiting class. Not to say that he's going to lose time or anything like that, but how do you think this coaching staff views Jarquez Hunter after a really successful first year?
I think they view Jarquez as a guy who could be a big-time playmaker down the road for him. I think the thing with Jarquez is he had huge numbers early in the season, not as much down the stretch. He's one of those kind of – he's got kind of the breakaway speed that maybe Tank doesn't have, but he doesn't have Tank's ability to kind of move the pile or, you know, get a lot of yards after contact. Now, he's a strong guy and he's a really good player, but, like, you know, Tank just kind of – that's what kind of makes Tank so special is that he can do a lot through contact, whereas Jarquez, when the hole opened up, he could hit it and hit big plays. And, you know, I think he's going to continue to evolve and become a better all-around back moving forward. I think he's a great 1-2 punch with Tank. They just need more depth in that room right now because with Tron Shivers gone, you only really have Jordan Ingram behind him, and he didn't play much this year. So they need to get more running backs. You got to constantly kind of cycle them in at that position at this level. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Like, well, the roster will change here over the next few months, but I think Auburn knows that, you know, with better blocking and more consistent blocking in his future and, you know, him continuing to get stronger and more polished as a running back at the college level. I mean, you saw him in spurts last season look like a future superstar. So, I mean, I think Jarquez Hunter's in a really good spot with this team.
Justin, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody where they can find all your great content and what you've got coming up for them.
Yeah, AuburnObserver.com. Check it out. $6 a month for $60 a year. Had a film room this week on Jabari Smith. Have a roster tracker where we're going to keep track of all the recruiting and the portal movement for Auburn here this offseason. You can find that there. had a podcast today, had a mailbag earlier today covering a lot of topics, and then tomorrow I'll be in Atlanta for the Nebraska game. We'll have coverage of that and a podcast over the weekend as well. So all that, auburnobserver.com. Sign up there. Everything we do gets emailed straight into your inbox.
Justin, enjoy the trip to the ATL tomorrow and have a great weekend.
Yeah, y'all too. Thank you.
That was Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer here with us in hour number one of the Friday edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you on the other side of this break. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390 if you want to join into the show. It's been a fun show so far. Just spoke with Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. Go and check his stuff out. AuburnObserver.com does a great job. Subscribe to him. He's got all the best analysis in the Auburn sphere, and he just helped us break down the NCAA penalties for the Auburn men's basketball program, just a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, and like he said before we went to break, had a fantastic film room on Jabari Smith and why he is the complete package and is definitely capable of making the transition to the NBA very smoothly. Fantastic work from Justin Ferguson at the Auburn Observer. And yeah, like you just mentioned, a little bit of a slap on the wrist. Probably the heaviest penalty we've seen come out of this this discussion between all these different schools and all their violations and different things like that. But still, at the same time, I think Auburn can handle it pretty well. And we all broke that down just a little bit ago.
Before we move on in the show here, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight. CBS has new episodes of its crime shows with SWAT at 7, Magnum PI at 8, and Blue Bloods at 9. A holiday approach on a new episode of Shark Tank at 7 on ABC. NBC's game show The Wall has a new episode at 7. Friday Night SmackDown is live from Los Angeles from 7 to 9 on Fox. Christmas movie selections, Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon star in Four Christmases on AMC at 7 p.m. Kevin McAllister may be the craftiest youngster ever. That is not somebody that I would want to tangle with. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York is on Freeform at 5:40 p.m., but seriously, quit losing the dude. In live sports, there is one college basketball game on tonight. DePaul is at Louisville at 7 p.m. on ACC Network. College football is on ESPN2 with an FCS playoff quarterfinal game between Montana and James Madison at 6 p.m. Two NBA games on ESPN tonight at 6:30. The Brooklyn Nets head to the Atlanta Hawks, and at 9 p.m., the Boston Celtics are at the Phoenix Suns. And that's what's on TV tonight. Not a whole lot of sports going on.
Yeah, and you know what? That's okay. I'm going to be at a rehearsal dinner for my sister's wedding tomorrow. Not going to have a whole lot of time to hang out and watch sports. Although, you know, if there was some fantastic college basketball going down, you know, I'd leave that dinner for in a heartbeat to watch some Big Ten basketball.
You wouldn't.
I'm kidding. Purdue though, Purdue Rutgers. That was so.
I was saving
hype.
That for the next segment, Lance.
Ah, okay, we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it. Just know that it was hype. We'll talk about what happened. That was hype.
Though. Well, I beckoned for it to happen when I said yesterday that I would be blown away if this game was even close. It was close.
It was.
And then Purdue proceeded to get blown off the court by Rutgers' half-court shot and then the inevitable court storming following it.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. It's only December, boys. March can't wait.
And it had to be none other than Ron Harper, who I said who to when you mentioned him. Had to be that.
Whenever I was like, yeah, he's been in the college game for like 30 years now. I was like, who's that kid? And I'm like, I don't know either. Anyway. Yeah, like you and I both yesterday, we were looking at it. We looked at some of the numbers. We were like, ooh, okay, so they don't score a lot. Oh, okay, so Purdue does. Oh, they're not as tall as Purdue. This could be an issue with the front court. Oh, yeah, this could be a blowout. And then that happened. It was just a phenomenal scene. Love that we're getting those moments in December with March just a few months away.
Yeah, as John Rothstein would say, this is only December.
Inject it straight into my veins. It was just a phenomenal scene. I saw it, you just have to watch it like three or four times to really soak it in. It's just a fantastic sports moment.
Major NBA game tonight, as mentioned on What's On Tonight. Brooklyn Nets coming down the East Coast to the Atlanta Hawks, 6:30 on ESPN. It'll be a fun weekend at State Farm Arena for the Brooklyn Nets not only coming down tonight, but Auburn playing over there tomorrow against the Nebraska Cornhuskers, and you and I expect Auburn to win handily tomorrow.
Auburn is favored to win by 14. What do you think about that?
I think they cover.
You think they cover? You think 50? 50 points is good?
Let's play a game, all right? Yeah, a little Saul there. I actually texted this to a couple of people. I texted this to you. I said, let's play a game, all right? Here's the condition. Auburn has to win by 50, all right? Okay. But these are the rules. If Auburn does win by 50, then Bruce Pearl's suspension is done and Auburn gets back their vacated wins. If they don't cover the 50, then Bruce Pearl is suspended for the rest of non-conference play and you don't get the wins back. Ooh. So it's kind of doubling down. I mean, that's fair odds right there. So I get 12 vacated wins that didn't matter back and Bruce only isn't suspended for a game, whatever. But if I fail to hit 50, then he's suspended for the rest of non-conference play with two tough non-conference games coming back. Does Auburn hit 50?
Can I abstain from picking this? Because
you don't see a whole lot of worth to it.
No, well, I would be afraid to say, yes, Auburn does win by 50. I'd be afraid to commit to it because I don't think that Auburn's beating opponents, especially Power 6 opponents, that often by 50 points. If I will say, though, I think there is some motivation there for Auburn tomorrow to just kind of prove themselves. And
prove a point.
Let a little bit of anger out. And the fact that it's in Atlanta, the fact that Nebraska is coming to what I would consider Auburn territory, given where Nebraska is coming from. Yeah, this should be a home court advantage in Holiday Hoops giving. I expect Auburn to control this one, and we're going to come back on Monday, and I'm just going to win by like 8. But I do expect Auburn to control this basketball game.
To be fair, Nebraska has lost its last two games to Indiana, where they lost by 13 on the road, and then they lost by 35 to Michigan in Nebraska.
At home to Michigan by 35 points.
And Michigan's good. But Auburn's better than Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan's 6-3, and they're 11 in the KenPom rankings.
And there's definitely nothing transitive about college basketball. College football is probably more transitive than college basketball is. But Auburn could put up a fat number.
They could. You look at Michigan, by the way. They've lost to Seton Hall, Arizona, North Carolina. Those are the three teams that they've lost to. If I were to lose to three teams, I wouldn't be mad at those. Seton Hall, by the way, I picked that right.
You did yesterday.
I said, yeah, Street Ball's going to somehow win this game.
And only won by 4.
And they only won by 4. It was a tough, tough night for both teams, but they managed, Seton Hall did, to pull out the win. And then I saw the CBS Sports updated top 25, and they dropped Texas from like 7 to 23rd, and they moved Seton Hall up one spot. Which did not make sense to me. But anyway,
I think that's a fair location, though, for both teams. I'm not sure if I'm ready to say Seton Hall's batch of victories is enough to leap them inside the top 18, top 15 area, considering all the different teams that are locked in right there. There's some undefeateds like Iowa State who are at 17 right now, and I don't think Seton Hall's done enough to get over those teams. But I do think Texas, in their two games against good teams, has played to a level to where it makes sense to have them in the low 20s.
Right. I mean, Seton Hall does have two quad one wins already, and they've only played 9 games.
Who are the quad one wins? Do you know?
Michigan and Texas.
Okay.
So, I mean, and they got a win over Yale, something Auburn and Michigan haven't
gotten. Ohio State and Cal weren't quad one wins for Seton Hall?
No, they lost to Ohio State. And I don't think I don't know if Cal's a quad one. If they are, then make it 3. But I know for sure Michigan and Texas are.
Interesting. So you weren't looking at the net rankings resume there for Seton Hall?
No, I can pull it up though. I saw the other day. I know that Michigan and Seton Hall and Texas, excuse me, for sure are quad one. But I'd have to go look and see if Cal is.
And then in another college basketball game last night, before we get out of here to wrap up hour number one, number 17 Iowa State extended out to 9-0, beat Iowa 73-53.
Beat them by 20.
I did not expect it to be this bad. I expected Iowa State to win as I picked it, but I did not expect it to be by 20.
Ditto.
Iowa State just legitimized themselves a little bit in my mind to be a potential top 15 team. That defense is for real.
Yep.
But then again, teams like Iowa, when they play this way, the way that they shoot the three ball so much, when it's not on, and you can get blown out like this. We've seen that with Auburn. That's it for hour number one of On the Line. We'll be back with hour number two coming up at 3 p.m.
You are On the Line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on foxsports983.com and espnau.com. You are On the Line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line. Noah Gardner and Lance Daw with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Fun show so far today. We spoke with Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer, as well as we spent a lot of time, pretty much 90% of hour number one, talking about the NCAA handing down its penalties to the Auburn men's basketball program, which comes off as a slap on the wrist, as well as we previewed the scouting report on the Nebraska Cornhuskers, as Holiday Hoopsgiving is tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. on ESPN2 for the Auburn Tigers men's basketball team as they take on Nebraska in State Farm Arena in Atlanta. A lot of good stuff on the show so far today. If you missed any of it, go find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. We're going to start off hour number two on the phone lines. 334-321-1390 is the number to call, and we've got Shane on the line with us. Shane, what's up, my man?
Hey guys, how are y'all today?
We're doing real well. How are you?
Hey, I'm well. I got a couple questions. One's about the how they do the rankings for college basketball. It just seems like the top four or five, that are five, six, seven, whatever, just a handful that they pick at the beginning of the year, they can lose and they just go down a few spots and then next week they're back up. And they just mix these up, you know, over and over each week. When you got teams on the bottom that will never get up there because they're so far down and they weren't included in that little mix to begin with. Mm-hmm. That's what it seems like. If a team hasn't been up there in a while and they're right number five, they lose. They get down to number 20. But like if Duke loses, they drop two spots or one spot or they don't even drop. So how is that? How do they do that? I'm just confused on how they do the ranking.
There seems to be more blue blood bias in college basketball than there is in college football, I think. And also in college football, when somebody loses, you kind of have to drop them six, seven spots because each game means more. And there are very few teams in college football that really see any type of benefit or lack thereof of just like massive dropping. Like Alabama lost and they might only drop four or five spots, but most teams when they lose in football, they drop a ton. Basketball, I'm with you. I see what you're talking about. I'll say this. Things typically start to get better when conference play rolls around, because if a team's not that good, like say Kansas had some trouble with this last year, and then we saw several blue bloods outside the top 25 last year. If they start rattling off three or four losses out of five games, then they'll start plummeting. But you are right. I think there is more blue blood bias in college basketball than there is in college football.
Especially early in the year.
Is there a reason, or is it just because what's the reason behind it?
I guess, you know, the idea is behind it's recruiting, you know, but is that even a legitimate reason at the end of the day that you got to play the games? On top of that, I think the other reason may be a lot of these teams inside the top 10 play each other, so it's really hard to kind of to compare. Like Gonzaga has played Alabama, Texas, and UCLA, and Duke, all top 10 teams right now. And the only teams that they've lost to out of that bunch were Duke and Alabama, but likewise, they beat Texas by double digits, and they beat UCLA by 20. So it's really hard to kind of evaluate Gonzaga, even though they have two losses, and there are teams down at 16 and 17 in the poll that are undefeated, but those teams haven't really played anybody. So it's kind of one of those things where we got to get to conference play first, but I'm with you. Sometimes it is head-scratching to me why, you know, Texas was in the top 10 still after a double-digit loss to Gonzaga, and they hadn't really played anybody. And I imagine they'll drop like a rock in water, though, after what happened last night against Seton Hall.
What about like a team like like Arkansas. Like, I have no idea what this team is going to be like because they're undefeated and they're ranked like 10th or something. But, like, you look at their schedule, they haven't played a decent team. So, I guess I can understand why. But then again, they're ranked pretty high. And then, I don't know.
You're right about Arkansas. Arkansas fits exactly what you're talking about because they're 8-0, and in this week's edition of the poll, they dropped two spots. All Arkansas's done is win, and they've been leaped. Now, part of that's because Alabama beat Gonzaga, and they just skyrocketed in the rankings. But to drop them two spots, you're not wrong. I get that. Arkansas's an enigma to me. They haven't played anybody. Their best win is Cincinnati, and they only won by 5. And they haven't played well against bad teams like Mercer and even Charlotte to a degree earlier this week.
Yeah, and you look at their net ranking, which the net rankings are computer-generated rankings. They are 43rd in the net rankings. They've only played one quad one team, and they've only played one quad two team.
Which that would be Cincinnati and Kansas State.
Right, exactly.
Hey, so about the sanctions that we just got, didn't really, since we imposed most of the stuff, it seems like we didn't really get much happened. You know, Bruce is banned for 2 games, but yada yada. But there's no postseason ban, correct? And there's
correct.
No, is there like a restriction? I didn't really get a chance to read it. A restriction on the recruiting?
No. So the stuff that got added, there was a $5,000 fine and 3% of the basketball budget. There was Bruce's 2-game suspension, and then they had a reduction of 2 total scholarships across a 4-year period. So walk-ons aren't going to be able to get awarded a scholarship at the end of the year. So really, you're right. Nothing really happened to Auburn. Of course, they're on probation for 4 years, which is just a fancy word for saying that the NCAA is watching you and you have to file a ton of paperwork.
Yeah. That's awesome. Is good proactive thinking about doing, you know, sanctioning yourself, knowing that something's going to happen. But is LSU the last team left that hasn't been sanctioned?
Right.
They're one of the last. I think Louisville's waiting for some penalties to come their way as well, if I'm misremembering that. But LSU is one of the last, yeah.
Okay, and last thing, football. Any news on OC and is Harsin interested in the Oregon, you know,
head coaching vacancy?
Right. Is there any truth to that? You think we can only speculate, I guess, but you guys know something.
I don't know too much about Harsin wanting to go to Oregon. I really haven't heard or seen anything about that. I'm sure the rumors, I mean, there's been plenty of rumors about Harsin, you know, this offseason about whether or not he wanted the Washington job or not, but I think he's pretty happy at Auburn.
Right. Is that a good thing?
I think so. I want to see him, you know, get some run here at Auburn, and I want people to be patient. I know this year wasn't optimal with the way that it finished, but the first 8 games definitely showed promise. And I want to see what he does when he's got his guys in the program.
I didn't think we should have had Bobo to begin with. I think that was part of the problem, and it was just year one, and you weren't going to win every game, even though it kind of looked like we were doing good towards the middle of the season until the wheels fell off. But what are they doing about the defense? Because that was a major problem. That was a major issue of why we lost the last, I don't know how many, 4 or 5 games. Because we couldn't stop a team in the second half. It seemed like it was just the second half in every game.
Yeah, offense and defense was a problem in the second half. You're not wrong there, Shane. Shane, let us tackle some of those questions. We're going to let you go. Appreciate the call.
See you guys.
War Eagle to you as well, Shane. That was Shane on the line with us, 334-321-1390. I'll tackle the defense first, and then we'll go back over to the offense because I know he had a question about the offensive coordinator search.
Right.
So starting with the defense, I understand people's criticism and discontent with Derek Mason in a handful of games this year, those games being Penn State because we made an injured Sean Clifford look like the best quarterback on the planet. made him look better than Tom Brady. I mean, he had like two or three incompletions in that game. It was absurd. He had almost a near-perfect performance against Auburn. That was a defensive issue. I think the same thing can be said about Will Rogers' second half, or really last three quarters in the Mississippi State game. That was another failure by this defensive coaching staff. Although Shane Beamer said that they ran two plays pretty much for the entire second half of the Auburn-South Carolina game, Auburn still did only give up 21 points. That was more of an offensive failure for me, so I don't credit that loss to Derek Mason. I more fault the offense for that, even though we all knew that the defense was going to have to play a lights-out game for an injured quarterback position and a hobbled offense and a hobbled kicking game, but I don't really fault that loss on them. And then the Texas A&M game, I think, is an offensive issue as well. So I look at it, and I think the defense this year played pretty well in about 10 games this season, 9-10 games this year, if you want to take off the South Carolina game. And he had the game plan of his life and the motivation of his life for his defensive players against Alabama. I was not going to be up in arms if they decided to move on from either of these coordinators. Neither was I going to be up in arms if they kept both of them. I didn't have too strong of an opinion. I understood the arguments for both. And keeping Derek Mason and having some continuity on defense may do that side of the football some good for his scheme that he's trying to install.
I really do think that is the case. I really do hope that Auburn's able to get in the type of recruits that they want. I hope they're able to get guys that fit Derek Mason's scheme well. And down the line, if he does choose to stay with the Tigers, Auburn is able to implement some of the things that he has run well at other different stops. Namely Stanford. So I would like to see some continuity, like you said, on that side of the football. I think it's going to do Auburn wonders in the long run if his scheme does eventually work out.
Look, I know things went really bad at Vanderbilt at the end for Derek Mason, but Derek Mason is also the only coach in Vanderbilt history that I can think of that had taken them to James Franklin may have done it too. I for some reason, I have a vague memory of Derek Mason being the only coach in Vanderbilt history to do something positive like have, you know, two or three 6-win seasons in a row or something like that at Vanderbilt, and then also getting them to bowl games, of course. We'll have to go and do some research on that. But he did punch above his weight class, I think, for most of his tenure at Vanderbilt. It ended really poorly. But those defenses, for a while, we all talked about Vanderbilt being a team that nobody wanted to play. And Auburn saw that firsthand when they played Vanderbilt in 2016 here in Jordan-Hare Stadium. I barely escaped with their season intact, you know? So I understand the discontent with a couple of the games this year. And so that was why I understood, you know, when people said, well, Mississippi State was a fireable offense. I've heard a lot of people say that. I get that. I understand those arguments, but I wasn't totally on board with letting him go either, because continuity is an advantage for a program, especially when you're overhauling the scheme on that side of the football. And I think a lot of the issues that we saw this year from Auburn were scheme related. And sure, some people can say, well, why didn't he alter his scheme for the players that he had on roster? Well, you need to start developing the younger players, the guys that will be here for multiple years in the future. You need to start developing those guys in this new scheme and getting it installed. So there's going to be growing pains with that. That's where the term growing pains comes from, you know. And I just think that was the case of what it was on defense. Because all in all, if you compare Auburn's defense statistically this year with Kevin Steele's defense last year, mm-hmm. with the exact same players, if not more talent last year under Kevin Steele, Auburn's defense significantly improved in stopping the run by about 40 yards per game. And in terms of defending the pass, they took about a 5 or 6 yard dip.
So since 1980, Vanderbilt has gone to 7 bowl games. 2 of them were from Derek Mason, 2016, 2018. And in those 2 years, the Commodores in 2016 were 36th nationally in total defense. And then they were 61st in 2018. So in order to get...
So at worst, they were average. But still, yeah, you talk about the players that they have playing against SEC competition.
That's exactly the point I was about to make, is the fact that they were in the top half nationally.
He beat Georgia.
In both years, exactly. And the fact that he was in the top half nationally in both of those seasons with the talent that he had on roster as opposed to what he was dealing with in the SEC, that was impressive.
Granted, it did fall apart, but he was also one of the longest tenured Vanderbilt coaches of all time, I would imagine, you know?
Yep.
I have respect for him, and I want to see things continue. And I still have respect for Mike Bobo, but I also understand, like I said, the arguments to move on the offensive side of the football. So I do agree with Shane on that, you know, I understand how some people were reluctant to be happy about that hire from the onset because of the groans that Georgia fans had next door, and then really for the better half of a decade, not a whole lot of success there from Mike Bobo. But as you said earlier when we were talking about Ted Roof being hired at Oklahoma, I think you made a great point. Although he may have not have been the hottest option on the market, I think his specific level of experience and expertise in the Southeastern Conference and knowledge of the region and recruiting from that landscape helped this coaching staff transition a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And that may be what that this Ted Roof hire eventually becomes. And honestly, I think I've said this before on the show, that's what I thought of the Mike Bobo and Derek Mason hires to begin with, is that I think this is trying to ease into the landscape. Now, I was not sitting there saying, oh, well, they'll be gone after a year because Brian Harsin will be like, okay, got it. Thanks, guys. You can go now. But obviously, things didn't work out for Mike Bobo. Derek Mason being kept on indicates that there is something else there for Brian Harsin in this program long term. So it eased Auburn into the SEC. It eased Brian Harsin into the landscape by hiring two coordinators that understand the landscape. Like you said, understand recruiting. They know what's going on. Keeping Derek Mason, I think, is positive long-term because that means Harsin values him. He values what he can bring to the table. Let's get some of his guys in, and let's see if this scheme could work. We could be saying a year from now, 2 years from now, okay, he got some of his guys in, and it actually got worse. So that could be the case.
Or he doesn't get his guys in, right, and recruiting's terrible on that side of the ball, and then it does get worse for sure.
And then Auburn becomes the Vanderbilt of the SEC, and then it's a 16-team SEC.
Don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
Look, it's definitely an opportunity. It's definitely on the table. Or, flip side, Auburn gets really good in recruiting. Let's see what happens in early signing day here in just a few days. And Auburn becomes one of the better teams, top five, top four in the SEC whenever the conference expands. So I think there's a little bit of a crossroads here for Auburn football. But getting a guy like Derek Mason, it's interesting to see what he will do over the course of these next 2 or 3 years, because I think the upside is definitely there with him.
His other question, he was asking about what's going on in the offensive coordinator search. From what we can gather, we spoke with Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com yesterday. From what we can gather, Zach Hill was the guy that they wanted, the Arizona State offensive coordinator. That is not going to work out. They've pretty much reset the search. They're going searching the landscape far and wide for somebody. But Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com did say yesterday that they've been impressed with the Seattle Seahawks quarterbacks coach, Austin Davis, who's 32 years old, former NFL quarterback, has only been coaching for 3 years. He's been a quarterbacks coach for the Seahawks for 2 years, and then he was an assistant quarterbacks coach for a season. So he's only been coaching for 3 years, not even really. So lack of experience there, but I also expect Brian Harsin to have a heavy hand in the offense moving forward, and it being him taking a lot more invested interest and that side of the football. He's going to have a lot more of a direct role in managing that side of the ball. So I don't think they're looking for a splash hire on the offensive side of the football to run that. I think they're looking for somebody a little bit, not you know, a yes man's not a great term for this, but I think a younger guy that's going to learn and be there to learn and be moldable.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I'm just curious to see who that guy may be if you're going to hire somebody that is a little bit more moldable and is impressionable and can work well with Harsin. I don't know of a name out there right now that could potentially be that guy. I mean, Keesaw is older. Andy Ludwig, a guy that I personally would enjoy.
I don't think
hiring.
He's even in play.
He's not, like Christian said, he's not heard his name, but I personally want him. But he's not in
be
play.
Be a great get.
But he's older. Kellen Moore, I don't know if he's on the table. But
I highly doubt it, considering I've not heard that name, but a close friend of mine suggested that when this opening first happened. And, of course, why would he leave the NFL and his sweet gig that he's got with the Dallas Cowboys other than Brian Hartson's his homie?
Yeah, and Bo Nix will be focused and having fun next year. It'll be around too. But honestly, I think Moore might be a guy if you're trying to get specifically somebody that's younger and will be able to kind of be that multiple guy. I think he's definitely an option, but as of right now,
I think Kellen Moore could be a Joe Brady-like hire.
That could potentially turn out to be. But honestly, Auburn, I think their options are increasingly becoming limited as the coaching carousel continues on. So
I think it'll end up being this Davis fellow from the Seahawks, or they're going to go with Keesaw.
Who would you rather have?
Keesaw.
Yeah, probably.
I think so. And I made this when the job first opened a little over a week ago. I can't believe it. It seems like it's been longer. I guess we're nearing 10 days.
It's been only a week?
It's been a week and a half. I mean, it happened right after the season ended. I mean, it's been about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks now, coming up on this Sunday. Yeah, it's been 2 weeks from this Sunday, I think. So it's been nearing that 14-day mark. Since this opened, Keesaw was one of my first – was one of the top guys on my list. And my reasoning for that was I felt like the Bobo tenure, and I don't know this for sure, but I just wondered about this. Bobo and Harsin may have not have worked well together. Bobo's been in the game for a long time. He's probably got his specific takes on how offenses should work, whereas Brian Harsin also has been in the game for a while and has been coaching offense for a while, probably has his specific taste on how an offense should work, and I don't think their respective schemes are exactly the same. Bobo comes from a little bit more of a southeastern flair on a pro-style offense, a little bit more of a run-first pro-style offense, kind of what you're seeing at South Carolina right now, whereas Brian Harsin, I think, is more of a pass-first West Coast guy that is more predicated on efficient, quick passing and going up to the intermediate level rather than focusing more of a running game. And, you know, obviously the running game was a crutch, what was a failure for Auburn this year. Auburn needed crutches on that side of the football, but it was not a – it just seemed like at times there were disconnects for the Auburn offense.
Well, Mike Bobo would have his script, and he'd have his two or three drives, and they would be fantastic at the beginning of the game. And then this is what would happen. Mike Bobo would walk over to Harsin, or he'd call down to him, or however they do it in the press box.
This is a joke. Just letting everybody know, this is a joke.
And he'd have his little sheet, and they'd all have every single play would be a run play. And Mike Bobo would be like, please? And Parsons going to be like, no, we're going to throw it. And Mike Bobo would be like, please? And he'd be like, no, we're going to throw it.
And I think Auburn fans should be enticed by the future of a West Coast offense, because I think it's the future. Not that the West Coast offense is, you know, the future across all of college football, but having a good passing game is a part of the future of college football and the framework of winning in college football. You need a great quarterback, you need a great offensive line, and you need a good defense. That's how you win in college football. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back as we continue to dive into this offensive coordinator search. Some more thoughts about that when we come back on the Line. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Big thank you there to Shane in our previous segment, calling in, asking us some great questions and giving us some great food for the rest of the show. We're going to be talking here about the offensive coordinator search for the next couple of minutes. Then we'll get into making headlines on the other side of this break, because there are some great headlines happening around the sports world today. I want to talk about the OC search just a little bit more, some other nuggets and things to break through with that right now. We were talking about how the search essentially appears to be reset, that they seem to be moving on from Zach Hill, and now it's pretty much anybody's game. I don't think it is the primary focus anymore right now. Signing day is within a week. It's on December 15th. That is Wednesday. It's 5 days away. I think the primary focus of this coaching staff all the way through next Friday is going to be working on getting these recruits indoors.
And it looks like Auburn is trying to make a push here before early signing day happens, and I hope that they are able to pick up some commits. Damari Alston tweeted out, I believe it was yesterday, saying Auburn fans are going to be hype about this what's about to happen.
He says that like every day, though.
And I'm like, okay, Damari, show me. I'm tired of you telling me that you're going to do it.
When's it going to happen?
Yeah. I grow tired of your words, Damari. Show me with your actions. Where are the recruits? Where's the pen to the paper? Give it to me.
It's coming.
I hope it is. I don't take Damari as a liar. I believe he's telling me the truth.
So that's where you kind of stand with the offensive coordinator search right now is, honestly, anybody's guess is as good as mine. I think Eric Keesaw is very much so at play, especially considering a lot of coordinators are moving around right now. That part of the coaching carousel is in full swing, if not into the later stages of it for the jobs that have opened up already, like where there are new head coaches and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma just announced both of theirs today. Brent Venables announced Jeff Lebby at OC and Ted Roof at defensive coordinator. Yes, that is the Auburn Ted Roof that was here about a decade ago when Auburn won the national championship. So I think Auburn's kind of, you know, like you said, they're kind of running out of time for great candidates. So that's why I lean more on that. I think it's going to be Keesaw. When you asked me earlier which one I would rather have, Austin Davis or Keesaw, and I said Keesaw because I think that he will work really well with Brian Harsin, and there will be synergy there. And I imagine that'll probably be what occurs. I think that that is the most attractive option to me at this moment.
Question to you. Obviously, it's different. It's very different situations, right, but for Oklahoma and Auburn in terms of hiring coordinators, and in Oklahoma specifically hiring their OC. But Oklahoma obviously was able to get it done in a relatively short time frame. Regardless of that, though, why do you think it's taking Auburn so long to find a guy and to get him to commit to the program?
I think this coaching staff is really particular. I think they have a very specific set of wants. I think they have a very specific culture that they're trying to fill. They're very personality-oriented. And
focused? Having fun? Yeah. I'm sorry. I'll shut up.
They are looking for a specific person, I think. And it's not necessarily going to be a splashy hire. A lot of Auburn fans wanted to hear Del McGee or Joe Brady. I don't even think those two guys are in play. I do not think either of those guys will be in orange and blue next year. And there's a lot of Auburn folks that are like, well, why don't we go and get those guys? I just don't think, you got to have interest from both of those people. And you may not even have interest from both of those guys if you approached them. But B, I just don't think that this coaching staff's particularly concerned with the way things have been done here over the years. I think they have their own take on how things work, and it's not necessarily going to be your hotshot, splashy hire from the Southeast.
Yep.
We'll be back to wrap up the last half hour of On the Line when we come back.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Last 30 minutes of the Friday edition of On the Line as we head into the weekend. Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. If you want to call in and ask us some questions, big thank you to Shane earlier on in the show for reaching out to us. We're going to get into making headlines now. Our first headline, Auburn men's basketball received its list of penalties earlier today from the NCAA. For about an hour and a half today, I was on the edge of my seat, as was a lot of Auburn people.
Yeah,
and you kind of knew when people woke up based on when they tweeted about it.
Yeah.
Shame on them that woke up at 10 a.m.
Oh, hey, I was awake today. Listen, I was awake at Sidetrack Coffee putting balloons up. I was awake. And then when I saw this, I was like, oh, boy. This is going to be a fun. Immediately, what I thought is like, oh, Noah and I are going to have a fun show today. It's like, this is going to be fun to talk about. But yeah.
Or not fun to talk about.
Or not fun. Who knows? But we've eventually found out it was not as bad as we thought it was. Auburn will be on a four year
probationary period.
I had to pull it up. Bruce Pearl will be suspended 2 games. Program will reduce the total number of scholarships by 2 during the term of probation, which turned out to mean Auburn will have 2 scholarships revoked over the course of that four-year probation.
Yeah, not per year, not but per total. Year,
but total. So that's definitely manageable. And a $5,000 fine, slap on the wrist, and then 3% of the basketball budget. So just essentially saying, you did this bad. We're going to tell you that you can't do these things. Also, give us your money. Thank you, NCAA. Appreciate it.
And a lot of paperwork.
And a lot of wasted education. And wasted time.
And little things like they have to alert recruits when they're talking to them and stuff like that of the fact that they've got these penalties and whatnot. I mean, little stuff like that that to us, you're like, oh, that's not a big deal. It's not going to affect anything on the floor, which you are correct. But it's probably going to be insanely annoying over the next 4 years. But worth it considering you are not banned from the postseason this year,
right? I think
or any
for this coaching staff, it's definitely going to be a frustration for sure. But for us fans, like for the majority of these next 4 years, I don't think a lot of us are going to be able to tell the difference in terms of product and in terms of just like what's going on within the program. And I think that's a good thing that Auburn was not hit hard with like, oh, well, Bruce Pearl's actually gonna he can't coach here anymore. Oh, you can't Jabari Smith can't play or something like that or something crazy or absurd or like you can't you can't go to the postseason for the next 4 years or something stupid. So very thankful that it was as light as it was.
Moving to our next headline here, Bryce Young collected two awards last night at the College Football Awards Ceremony, taking in the Davey O'Brien and the Maxwell Award. Four other Crimson Tide players were named All-Americans, those being Jameson Williams, Evan Neal, Will Anderson Jr., and Bryce Young, of course. So Alabama cleaned up yesterday at the awards ceremony. I expect Bryce Young to win the Heisman tomorrow as well, unless Will Anderson can put on quite the write-in campaign.
Exactly. And I honestly, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think he will finish in the top five of voting. I would love to see it happen, him manage to finish in, what, the top three?
I hope he finishes past Hutchinson. Two of the guys at least there.
Yeah, I wrote an article making the case for Will Anderson to win the Heisman, and then an Alabama fan came at me on Twitter and said, I can't believe you advocated that C.J. Stroud was a better quarterback than Bryce Young, and at no point in the article did I mention anything about C.J. Stroud other than the fact that he was going to be there at the Heisman ceremony. So yeah, I definitely think highly of Will Anderson. I know he didn't necessarily produce in the biggest games of Alabama's season, but he has way more production than Hutchinson, and I think that he definitely at least deserve to be in New York. Also, you see how they've now changed it to where only four players get to go to New York for the Heisman ceremony? Like, that was a rule implemented this season, so it's no longer five, it's just four now. Permanently. And I have issues with that. And this is a point that Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South made on a podcast recently. Let's say you take, like, Jabril Peppers in 2016, I believe it was. It's like there's no shot he was winning the award over Lamar Jackson, right? Like, Peppers only had like 11 first place votes as opposed to Lamar Jackson's 520-something. He wasn't going to win the award. But what was it? It was pride, obviously, at stake for Peppers. It was the fact that he would have been able to say, I was one of the five best players in college football this season.
He was a finalist.
It was a finalist. It was pride for the school. It was pride for his hometown. It was pride for his family. It's pride for his teammates. Why not have that? Why not bring him on to the ceremony just to be able to say, that program and all of those different people to be able to say, yeah, one of our guys was a Heisman finalist. Even though he wasn't going to be able to make it, it was clear he was so thankful to be there in New York. It was clear that he genuinely appreciated the opportunity. Why not have that fifth guy? It's a better number than four, in my opinion.
They misspelled Will Anderson Jr. on one of those four guys that were invited.
Yep. They slammed their hand on the keyboard and they accidentally put Aiden Hutchinson. Which Aiden Hutchinson, by the way, phenomenal. Very similar to the way that Chase Young played during his time at Ohio State and very dominant off the edge. We obviously got to see that.
And I think he deserves to be there.
He deserved to be there. But I'm saying, like, I don't think it was fair to not let Anderson come. And this was a conversation that you and I had.
I think he's the best player in football.
You've got three quarterbacks there. Why do we have to have three quarterbacks when we know one of them is definitively going to win the award?
So let me ask you this.
Right. Well, the answer, I think, to that question would be, well, it's just because, you know, they were good players and we want to have them there. Okay, why isn't Will Anderson here?
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Will Anderson, can you think of a game this year where he wasn't absolutely destructive?
I can't. I'd have to go pull up.
I mean, when you bring up the fact that he's got 92 tackles and leads the nation in tackles for loss and sacks with 32.5 and 15.5 of those two areas. I mean, he averaged over a sack in a game, and even if you don't record stats, you can see how destructive he is, right?
He didn't have a sack in two games, and both of those were in September. It was against Mercer and then Florida the following week.
Whoop-de-doo, you know?
Yeah. He had four sacks against Mississippi State, 1.5 against LSU, two against New Mexico State. I mean, he was very consistent, very consistent.
Not saying that Bryce Young doesn't deserve to win it if he does win it, because I think he is going to win it tomorrow. And if it's not Will Anderson, I would say that Bryce Young should win it this year. But you can look at some games this year where Bryce Young wasn't at his best.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you could definitely look at early on in the season.
Iron Bowl also.
And the Iron Bowl was not very good for him as well. So, honestly, I don't think that it's fair to not have Will Anderson in the picture in this Heisman ceremony. I think I said this on the show. I had an article written that was three reasons why I don't think Young should win the Heisman. And it is because I think that Young is not the best player on his team. He is very talented. Do not misconstrue what I'm saying.
I think he's the best Alabama quarterback to have ever worn the uniform. And some Alabama fans are going to be like, what? And I'll be like, yes, he is definitely the best passer to ever wear an Alabama uniform.
I don't know if I have enough information to be able to say that, but I can definitely understand where you're coming from. He is a very, very talented quarterback, 100%. But I think Will Anderson's the most dominant player on his team. That's just my opinion. I also think that Kenny Pickett, while you may say what you will about the strength of schedule and different things like that, he literally put up almost identical numbers, and I think I would argue that he had less talent around him. Which I also say in the article, I'm not advocating for Kenny Pickett to win the Heisman. I'm just saying I think it should be Will Anderson because there was a quarterback of similar nature that put up similar numbers in a weaker system. So that's just my opinion on it.
And the reason why I was diving into the, well, should Will Anderson, like, look at how consistent Will Anderson has been and how he's been the most destructive player on the field every single game, whereas Bryce Young hasn't always been you know, at his best level consistently from start to finish. I mean, you literally have to start finding ways to differentiate between the two, right? When you're talking about this elite class of players that is going to the Heisman Award ceremony on Saturday, with the exception of Will Anderson, of course, but he should be there. Will Anderson all year long, I think, has been the best player on the field. On his own team, for sure, I agree with you saying that. There has never been a game where he has taken a day off. Now, and not saying that Bryce Young has either, but you can look at specific instances where the Alabama offense has needed the Alabama defense to win them a football game this year. You can.
You can't tell me that Bryce Young in this Alabama offense, you look at some of his numbers, I mean, they're impressive. He's thrown for over 300 yards in the majority of his games this season. He finished the year completing 68% of his passes. That's all good, well and good, but you can't tell me that Alabama had a running game and that this offense, the best part of it, was Bryce Young. Even though they had a running game, they were fifth in attempts, right, in the SEC. They had 473 attempts. They averaged 147 yards per game. That was 10th in the SEC. So they didn't have a running game. They forced Bryce Young to throw the football, right, and that resulted in what? I wouldn't necessarily say boosted numbers, but still, your lack of running game is apparent. You've tried to run the ball, you couldn't, so it's Bryce Young time. It's hero ball time, and Bryce Young was able to deliver time and time again, but it's because you had to. In the past, Alabama teams have had running games that they could lean on. 2015, it was Derrick Henry. Last year, we saw Najee Harris. Whenever the offense wasn't getting Devontae Smith open in space, it was, well, let's run Najee Harris. He was phenomenal. He had 25 touchdowns. This year, it's a little bit more focused on Bryce Young throwing the football, and I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying all of this advocates for Will Anderson being the more dominant player on this team, because I would argue that there is less talent surrounding Will Anderson on that defense that's on his level, right? I think he's had to have a ton of production in order to keep that unit alive.
Moving on to our next headline here in our Making Headlines segment, Alabama's Kool-Aid McKinstry, Dallas Turner, and JoJo Earl were named to the freshman All-SEC team yesterday. Auburn's Jarquez Hunter was named to the team as well. On the offensive side of the football, bright futures for all of these players. And I want to take this in the direction of Jarquez Hunter being named to the team. We asked Justin Ferguson about how he thinks this coaching staff views him moving forward after a successful freshman campaign. I like him as a compliment to any of the running backs that are brought in the future from henceforth, because I think they're all going to be different than how Jarquez plays the game. I think Jarquez could end up being the bruiser back out of this backfield in the coming years, and I think they're looking for more of those speedier one-cut guys to join him along in the backfield, those being Damari Austin and, if they can get him, Trevante Citizen.
Right, and no knock on Jarquez Hunter. I mean, for him to run for almost 600 yards as a freshman for Auburn as the backup running back, that's impressive. Auburn's needed that in their backfield for 2 or 3 years now. Fantastic what Jarquez Hunter was able to do. I think he deserved freshman All-SEC team. But like you just said, I don't think he is necessarily built to be that number one back at Auburn. I think he's definitely going to his career is going to be defined by the change of pace that he brings to this offense. And I think he definitely is going to benefit Auburn whenever he does touch the ball.
Moving along to another headline here, talking about recruiting, DeColdest Crawford. One of the best names in all of high school football recruiting. DeColdest Crawford, a wide receiver, named his final four teams right here in his recruitment signing days approaching. Auburn, Nebraska, Texas, Florida earlier today. Auburn in the mix for the four-star wide receiver waiting today in the university that he'll be going to play football for. Dakotas Crawford, a former LSU commit who decommitted a couple of days ago.
Do you think we get him?
I don't know. There hasn't been a whole lot of made of Dakotas Crawford and Auburn. There's been more made of other receivers, such as I think it's Antonio Williams out of South Carolina, and then of course, Darius Clemens is back on the board now, and I actually think is an Auburn lean at this point. And then on top of that, also Camden Brown was another name that was on campus recently. I think there are other names, but I also think Auburn's in the market to take a ton of receivers. This is something we talked a little bit about yesterday at the end of our show. I think Auburn's looking to retool and possibly overhaul the entire receiving core, with the exception of a few names. Like, I think Javarius Johnson and Kobe Hudson have plans moving forward in this receiving core. I think that we will see them from henceforth. But I think Auburn's going to hit the transfer portal for a name or two. And obviously, by the fact that they've already got three wide receiver commits right now, and the fact that I think they're trying to take another two or three more, they're obviously trying to take what was on this roster and receivers, and they're trying to mold it into something else that fits more of what they want out of the position in this new scheme that they're bringing to the table. This offense was not built to have a super efficient offensive attack built around a passing game. That was not what this was built around when these guys were recruited under Gus Malzahn. This coaching staff has different plans, I think, for this unit entirely.
So recently on Auburn Wire, we put out an article of five different receivers Auburn could try and get in the transfer portal. And one of them was a guy that you and I have our eye on in Theo Weiss. Does Auburn have a legitimate shot to get him?
Five-star.
We don't know. Okay, so Theo Weiss, right? Joseph Skates, which is a wide receiver from Iowa State, 6'3", former four-star. Rajay Johnson, who is a wide receiver at UAB, 6'4", 215-pound receiver. This season, caught 23 catches for 394 yards and a touchdown. Jafar Armstrong, wide receiver out of Illinois/Notre Dame, played a small role in Notre Dame's 2020 offense before transferring to Illinois. 6'1", 220-pound former three-star. And then Latrell Fordham, wide receiver out of Eastern Michigan, 6'4", 180 pounds, former three-star. Athleticism, length, a big factor in a lot of these different names that Zach Blackerby, good friend of the program, put together. But again, I think Theo Weiss would be a phenomenal get for Auburn, because if you can get Weiss, Hudson, and Darius Clemens, as we spoke about
this receiving course going to be good.
That would be a solid receiving core. I would be very
plus
very
all
happy
the tight ends
that.
Like Landon King,
right?
That can also line up in the slot and play some wide receiver.
Right. You've got Landon King.
All of a sudden, Javarius Johnson and Tavarius Dawson are your peripheral players that I think are good. Change of pace if you need them as a sub every once in a while.
And then you have Mike O'Reilly Ducker coming in.
Oh man, I forgot about him.
Yeah, he's
the first big commit of this coaching staff.
Dude, this tight end room is absolutely loaded for next year, even with the loss of John Samuel Shanker.
It's going to be absolutely sick. I'm so excited. One more headline here before we go to break. Auburn High alum Muhammad Diabate has entered the transfer portal following his junior season with the Gators. I think this would be a good get for Auburn if they could get him to come back home.
Do you think he will come back to Auburn?
Mahmoud Diabate fits the scheme. I think he is an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme, edge rusher, pass rusher kind of guy, but he's slim enough to where he can drop back into coverage if you wanted to. He can do some of those outside linebacker duties that can be called upon, so there's some versatility there. That's why he ended up at Florida all along. He was not going to be a hand-in-the-dirt type of guy. If you remember under Malzahn and those defenses, they had four-man fronts traditionally. And although that fourth guy would be an edge rusher, they were large. They were bigger guys. They looked like defensive linemen. That is not the case with this coaching staff. I think they want kind of your traditional, kind of like what Alabama does with Will Anderson. I mean, Will Anderson's an outside linebacker that is adept at pass rushing. I think that's what they're looking for. Diabate fulfills that. I just don't know if Auburn's on his list of places that he's looking at.
89 total tackles.
Good player.
This season.
He's one of the best players on that defense. They're losing a good one.
Yep.
And I watched him play high school ball. I was doing sideline reporting at the time for the Auburn High broadcast when he was at school. He's a big guy then. He's a big guy now. And He's got a lot of energy, and when he can inject some real life into this pass rush that I think is needed. Wasn't horrible, but wasn't great either this year. I think he could be a difference maker in that area. Let's take a quick break here. We'll wrap up this week's edition of On the Line when we come back. Wrapping up the Friday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Got a couple minutes left until the drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Pack. That'll be following us from 4 to 6 p.m. Some rumors going around out there, of course, about the Oregon head coaching job. One place reports that they've got a coach. Another one reports that that is not true.
We'll have
so
to see.
The rumor mill. You know, that welcome to the coaching carousel. There are some rumors that it could have been Georgia defensive coordinator Dan Lanning, but some other places have came out and refuted that. So
yeah, well, there are also some rumors that I took the job, but those will be refuted pretty quickly.
If they don't take Noah Gardner, head coach of the Florida Gators on NCAA Football 14 right now,
who's balling?
They are sorely mistaken. One-time national champion, career record like 127 and 28. They're making a mistake. I'm the next Bear Bryant.
What would be your pitch to Oregon if they were to interview you?
I wouldn't want to interview with Oregon because I was previously head coach at San Jose State, who is in the Pac-12 now, and I have too much respect for my former institution for me to go and play against them consistently in the Pac-12.
So you,
I fielded offers from USC and whatnot while I was at San Jose State, rejected them. Was going to win a national championship with that program, and I did.
You did the Lane Kiffin thing where you just took pictures of every single airport in America and just tweeted
them
out.
No, we're much more respectable than that. Right. We're much more respectable than that. I was there for 8 years, and now I'm at Florida.
How do you think Ole Miss beat writers feel covering that, by the way?
I think they love it.
Just like, oh, well, he's in Auburn now. Oh, well, he's in Austin, Texas. Like, we don't know what he's doing, but
I think they love it. And I think he's staying put. I really thought he was going to end up in Miami about a month ago. Not the case.
No, sir.
Not the case. That is it for another week of On the Line. We'll be back with you on Monday talking all things that happened over the weekend, Auburn, Nebraska, as well as is there an offensive coordinator hire signing day right around the corner. We'll be back with you on Monday. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.